And I have to say, are you excited about today? Because I really am, and you should really be, because I have come across the coolest expert in town, if I might say so myself. She actually came recommended to me by Helen and Jackie from Two Girls and a Laptop. So shout out to you, ladies. And as a digital marketer myself, when they suggested I connect with you, I was like, wow, I've never come across such a thing, such a person, such a niche expertise. And without further ado, I want to extend a massive welcome to Suki, who is the head honcho at Origami Globe. And before I hand over the reins to you, Suki, I just want to give a little bit of background info on you. So she's a self-confessed competition and nerd and guru on all things giveaways. Okay. And she channels all this wisdom throughout her business, Origami Globe, where she helps startups and small businesses leverage the incredible power that are competitions to help them launch, market, and boost their businesses. So in short, she really helps business owners how to run compelling competitions that get real results and revenue. I can see that is like a big thing for you. Is that right, Suki?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I love it. Now, you must be in a niche where you have very few competitors. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes. Yeah. So I guess my biggest competitors are just other marketing agencies who
Yes.
offer alternative marketing strategies. But to be honest, I believe that the pie is big enough for everyone. And I
Yes.
usually just end up working with these people. But as far as I know, correct me if I'm wrong, there are no other specific competition experts out there.
No. But well, that's it, right? So when Helen and Jackie recommended that I check you out, and I did, I was like, wow, this is so cool because I've never come across a person who is such an expert in such a specialized area of digital marketing. And I can see how there is such a demand for something like this. So props to you. I think you've uncovered a wonderful gap in the market.
Yeah, it's been really awesome introducing competitions to small businesses because generally the response that I get, oh yeah, we did one of those, it didn't work. And so then we start a conversation about their marketing goals in general and their business goals, and then kind of show them that, okay, cool, well, it's kind of like a puzzle, you know, if you just jam the pieces in anywhere, of course it's going to look like a mess. But if you pick the
Yes.
right pieces to go in the right places, then you end up with this beautiful picture. So, yeah, it's been really interesting. I suppose as well, my business is like a two-step thing. So I have to explain to
Okay.
people the usefulness of competitions and how.
Okay. There's an education process here. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
Okay. And I can see that. You know, it's interesting you say that. Yesterday, in fact, I was speaking with someone. She's got a business called The Uniform Stylist, and she was expressing a similar challenge in her business, which said the exact same thing. You know, there is a big unknown around the process of how this works. And I was saying the same thing that you just said, that that's where, you know, for yourself as a business owner and a marketer, you have a responsibility to educate the prospect around how that process works. You can't just assume or hope that they're going to guess on how this all works,
Yeah,
right?
definitely. Yeah. And I guess that's why a big part of our marketing for our business as well is content marketing. So we get a lot of customers and traffic from Google. So people searching, you know, how do I run a competition, or how do you run a proper competition, or what are
Yes.
the rules? So that's like a huge area that we educate businesses on, as the rules and the right way to do a competition.
Love it. Okay. So I want to get into some of the hard questions now. You know, as a digital marketer here, I'm just hanging out to pick your brains on this stuff. And I'm going to ask some questions for listeners. And then also, you know, I am going to be a bit selfish because I want to know for myself, but I know this will help our listeners and our audience a lot, being small business owners as well. Really broadly speaking, though, before we kind of dive into the specifics around competitions, can you give me some examples and our listeners some examples around exactly how powerful competitions can be? Like, what can they do for your business when they are done well?
Yeah, sure. So my response to this question is always, what can't they do for your business? If you've got a problem that you want to solve, or you've got a goal that you
Yes.
want to achieve, then competitions can help you get there. So say, for example, you're launching a product and you need some feedback from your target market, you can create an incentivized survey with a competition attached to encourage people to complete the survey. and you'll get a higher completion rate, a higher engagement rate, and you'll also then be building, because of the way that you target your competition, you'll be building a targeted database that you can then market to once the product's launched. On the other end of the scale, say, for example, you have a super successful t-shirt business and you've run out of slogans and you want to crowdsource some slogans from your target audience. You can, you know, just launch a super simple competition on Facebook, get people to comment, get people to like their favorite slogans, and then, hey presto, you've got a whole bunch of marketing ideas and information and feedback from your target audience. People tend to get a bit caught up in the like and follow competitions because it's kind of the bread and butter. It's what people know and it's what people see most often.
Yes.
But to me, those are the bottom of the barrel. They're really the last thing that you should be aiming for. For me, the big aim is to get people's email addresses or to get to invite them into your community at least so that you've got an ongoing relationship with them.
Yeah, I really agree. I mean, it's interesting, right? That whole premise of the like and follow. I think, like you said, there's a risk there that, first of all, you're not attracting the right audience necessarily. That can be, I think, pretty, it can be risky and it can be relatively damaging because I know, for instance, in running so many Facebook ads, exactly, if you're pixeling all of these people who are visiting your website because, you know, they've liked your page, or you're tracking exactly like you're targeting your Facebook fans and you've run a competition on Facebook to drive likes. I don't even know if it's permissible anymore, but you get the gist here around what I'm getting at is that the pixel is collecting data around people who are potentially not the right people. Whereas, like you're saying, exactly, when you get them to give you your email address, there's more of a commitment. It's like a micro commitment that they make, right? And so it's more conscious. They are more committed. It's probably more aligned with the avatar that you have for your business. And I can see the value in that. Not to mention that it's so true, you know, like I always teach our students that you've got many assets as a business, right? And your social assets are all well and good. But the minute that the algorithm changes or something stuffs up with your account and perhaps, you know, you're banned or what have you, you're left with nothing. Yeah. Whereas when you have an email list, well, that's yours, right? And there's no algorithms to play against you. You send an email, your prospect receives that. Yeah. It's guaranteed. So I totally agree.
Yeah. A fellow business owner described it as basically being a tenant of Facebook and Instagram. Like you're just renting the audience, you're just renting the space. And if they want to take it back or move in or do renovations or sell it, then tough, you've lost access to that audience. So, you know, it's great having 50,000 followers, but if you can't access them, if Facebook's taken away from you, then they're not your audience.
Yes, exactly right. Whereas if you have those 50,000 people on your email list, holy moly, right?
Exactly. Like so much opportunity.
Hashtag winning. Yes. Exactly. I always say, like, you know, your email list, there's just money sitting there always, you know, whereas your social list, it's a lot more challenging. And every day those challenges are becoming greater and greater to get in front of the faces of the right people. So I completely agree. Okay, cool. Now, you gave us some really great examples of different competitions based on the goals that you're looking to achieve. I guess one of the questions that came up for me is, so say with a given client, Suki, who has various goals, because we all have various goals at any given point in time. How would you manage those? And would you run, you know, a competition maybe every month to hash out one of those goals? Or what's kind of like a healthy competition rate, I suppose, before it looks a bit overs?
Yeah. So this is like the first thing that we do with our clients is we always have a long chat with them. And we chat not just about their goals for their competition, but the goals for their business as well. So they may think that a goal for their competition is to collect a whole bunch of email addresses. They can put them into their funnels that they've spent ages creating and refining. And then we talk a bit longer and we find out actually what they're trying to do is drive revenue. So you know, they're looking to launch a new product and they need to raise revenue to launch that new product. So by having that chat, we get to, you know, we weed out the secondary goals and the, you know, nice to have but not really essentials. And then we get to the one goal that would really make a huge difference for their business. So then we work on that. And those, I really like to tackle the big goals. I, you know, getting likes for a Facebook page is not really my bag these days.
Yes.
It's kind of a secondary, you know, it can happen naturally with a competition.
Yes.
So, yeah, I always say to people that it kind of depends on your audience in terms of the number of competitions that you run. So if you're running a really long competition for the whole month, And it starts on the 1st, ends on the 31st, and then the 31st, you close the competition, announce your winner, and then the 1st, another competition's rolled around straight away again, and it runs for the whole month. Your audience are probably going to get a bit fatigued.
Yes.
They're going to be over it, but also potentially, you know, it's kind of like when certain printing companies constantly bombard you with emails because you had business cards printed with them once, and it's always like 30%, 40%, 50% discount, Black Friday sale. You're never going to pay full price for their products. So if you're running competitions every single month, then potentially your clients aren't going to convert to sales. They're just going to wait for the next competition to roll around in the hope that they're going to win and potentially never convert to a customer.
Yes. I totally agree. I mean, it almost reminds me of Pavlov, right? It's your responsibility to create as a business and marketer the behavior that you want your customers to adopt. And that's exactly right. If you start to condition them that they have the opportunity to buy your products or services at a discount every month or, you know, every 3 weeks or what have you, you're not going to be able to sell a full price item ever.
Yeah. Basically. And you're also not allowing yourself the opportunity to convert those new leads that you've collected from the competition. So say, I would say the ideal setup would be quarterly. So the first month would be prepping your database, you know, getting rid of the ones who aren't interested, removing the bounces so that your deliverability on the emails is better. Then the second month you run the competition, and then the third month is about trying to convert as many of those people to customers, or at least start segmenting your database so you know who is a good potential customer and who just entered the competition and is, you know, never intends to buy.
Okay, like it. Awesome. Okay, so quarterly. And what about, you know, I'd love to understand, you know, as a small business owner, I've run a few competitions for our business, but I'd love to hear from the expert any advice that you have around how to create a competition once you're clear on your goal. So for instance, exactly like you said, if the goal is to secure additional revenue, which as part of that is to secure additional email addresses so you can drive them down your sales funnel. Can you give maybe some examples around like how to create one perhaps? Like where do you get started with this?
Yeah, sure. So these are the same steps that I use for my clients. So you know, it's a tried and tested. So once you've decided on your goal, that's the most important thing. So do not skip that step. And really, really think about it and stress test it. So, yep, this is definitely my goal. I want to move ahead with it. So we've all heard of the who, what, when, why, how. And the same applies to competitions. So the next step would be to work out your who. So if you don't already have one, you really need to get a client avatar for your business. You really need to know exactly who it is that's likely to buy
your product. So true.
And once you know who is going to buy your product, you can then work out where they hang out. So where they're likely to see your competition, where they're likely to enter your competition, where they're likely to share your competition even. Then once you know who you're going to target, then you start thinking about your timeline. So start with the date that you ideally want to launch, then fill in your duration, and then allow yourself at least 2 weeks before that to run a bit of a pre-countdown teaser campaign. And then at the end of the competition, make sure you allow yourself enough time to actually process and convert those entries. So once you've worked out your timeline, then you would think about your budget. So even if you just open up a blank document and you start writing down everything you've spent on your competition, you know, $500 for Facebook ads, $30 for an app to manage the entries, you know, a graphic designer, $10 to put together a post for you, or $10 per post, etc. So tracking what you spend on the competition is really important because at the end, you guess what I'm going to say, you're going to track your return on investment. So, I, you know, likes are great, but they don't pay the bills, they don't keep the lights on, they don't pay your staff. So you need to be going for the dollars, and you, in order to track how much you've made, you need to know how much you've spent. Then you'll work out your entry method, and your entry method hinges very strongly on your goal. So if your goal is to collect email addresses, you're not going to run a comment campaign. So you need to make sure that you've got that all sorted, and then your prize. So big tip is the best prize for your competition is always your own product or service. And the only option to that is if you're offering a package and you're partnering with other like-minded businesses and you're offering prizes which all complement each other and you're all going for the same target audience, or travel prizes if you've got a bigger budget, because they're really tempting. But again, you have to tie that into your business. You know, if you're a kickboxing trainer, you don't want to give away a a mountain climbing experience. It doesn't.
I couldn't agree more with you. Yeah. And part of that is also exactly ensuring that you're actually attracting people who are compelled by your offering and not like a $100, you know, David Jones card.
Exactly. Yeah. And another tip is cash and vouchers are an uphill struggle. Because when you see it, all you see is $100 and you think, okay, the kids need school shoes. I've got to buy uniforms, or, you know, that textbook costs X amount of dollars. So you start thinking in terms of, you know, what your family needs or paying off credit cards. So cash is tempting, but it's really not going to get the specific people for your business who are going to turn into customers. It's just going to attract people who need cash or vouchers.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it goes back to exactly ensuring that you're attracting and engaging quality leads.
Yep.
One question I have for you, I love that you said, you know, so that you can track your ROI at the end of the campaign. That was like music to my ears, because it's something that I think so often gets missed in the whole marketing game. You know, people are so focused on tracking their financials, but it's equally as important to track your marketing data and financials for that matter. So on that note of tracking, can you give me some examples? So for instance, if you were, how would you gauge the success of a campaign? So say that you were doing a giveaway campaign with email addresses, would you add a certain tag, for instance, in the email marketing platform to ensure that, you know, after the fact, you could see if that person purchased your product? Or how would you track? Can you give some examples around that?
Yeah. So obviously what you have in mind is kind of the long-term slow burn sales. So, you know, you may get 3,000 entries into your competition and
yes,
you know, 20 of them may convert the day after the competition and the rest of them may need a bit longer depending on your sales cycle and your business cycle. So yeah,
okay.
You definitely would tag them. You definitely would be specifically marketing relevant info to them based on the prize and what competition they entered. But
okay.
There are more immediate ways and more kind of reliable ways to track the revenue from the competition as well. So mm-hmm. One of my favorite ways is using Google Analytics goals.
Okay.
So based on what they click, what their journey is on your site. And mm-hmm. An important part of this is when you draw people to your site to enter,
yes.
You need to make sure you have a thank you page. So once they've entered
yes.
Your competition, it redirects to a completely unique URL. That's a thank you page for entering. That way you can track mm-hmm. conversion. How many people went to the competition page and didn't enter? How many people went to the competition page and did enter and saw the thank you page? And then you can use that thank you page to remarket using Facebook pixels,
yeah.
You know, Google AdWords, all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm.
My other favorite tactic is sending them an offer that's combined with the winner announcement. So if you're collecting
cool.
emails,
I like
you
that.
Would wait to announce who your winner is. And then mm-hmm. when you announce the winner by email, you would say something mm-hmm. like, you know, but everyone's a winner with Origami Globe because here's a X amount discount or here's an ad or here's a special offer that's only for you guys who entered the competition as a way to say thank you. And that's a direct way to track revenue because that discount code or that button or that landing page even is only open to the people who entered your competition.
I like it. That's really cool. Okay. Love it. In terms of creating a competition as such, would you be able to walk us through, for instance, like a successful product competition, for instance, that you have created for a client in terms of, you know, step by step, kind of just saying what the logistics were, what it drove, and what the outcomes were?
Yeah, sure. So just thinking about products.
Yeah, I just think it would be really great to kind of have more of a tangible example that we can relate to.
Yeah, sure. So probably one of my favorite competitions I've ever done mm-hmm. was a competition for a sporting goods company. And
okay.
They wanted to give away a trip to a championship, you know, the big event of the year in their particular sporting niche, which was mountain biking.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so we put together a competition. So we talked about the goal. So the goal was to grow the database. And we talked about the person they wanted to target. So we got very specific. We named our avatar. And that's another big tip. If you can name your avatar, you can speak
yes.
directly to them. You know, no one is between 25 and 35 years old. I'm not between
I totally agreed.
And 35. I am 30 something. Like I'm a specific age. So, yeah. So
I thought you were 21.
Yeah.
Suki, 21,
every single year. Yeah. Notice how I
me
said 30-something. I didn't say my age.
I did. I was like, I'm totally going to call you out on that. You just put the bait out there.
Yeah. So then we came up with a very specific avatar. We wrote all of our messaging to appeal to that particular avatar. And mm-hmm. then the once we'd worked out the strategy, which was all those steps I mentioned earlier with the prize and the entry method, we yes. then moved on to the promotional material. So a massive Sukiism that I always say is a
Sukiism. Competition. Sorry, I just have to say that Sukiism. I love that.
That's a thing now. A successful competition is 20% strategy and 80% promotion. So if you don't promote
20, the 80-20 rule. Exactly. Sorry, I just had to jump in. That's just so golden. Yeah, sorry, keep going.
To 80-20.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so once you've got your strategy, that's only one piece of the puzzle. So then you need to promote the hell out of your competition. And people worry, oh, but what if I post too much on Facebook? What if my audience gets sick of me? Good. If they get sick of you, they opt out. They're not your customer. If they're sick of your messages, mm-hmm. they're not going to be your customer. So, mm-hmm. you know, message as much as you want on your Facebook page, email people, get partners to promote it, put together social media posts. You need to have a schedule of promotional activities that you're going to complete. Ideally, put aside some spend for ads as well, as long as you know what you're doing there. So once we did that, then we ran the competition and we put out these reminders and these posts, and we mm-hmm. changed the header of the Facebook page and changed the bio on Instagram, changed a header on the website, all of these things that promote the competition and tell people we're running one.
Yeah.
After the competition was over, we then sent out an email to everyone who had entered to thank them for entering. We used my little trick of the winner announcing us an offer. I think within 24 hours, we generated $2,000 from that email alone.
Just
for the products that they sell on their website. And then through the use of the Google UTMs and setting up goals and tracking in Google Analytics, we worked the campaign for a spend of $6,000. And that obviously includes our professional fees and a good chunk of that, more than half, was the travel prize itself.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up making over $70,000 from it. So it was a, 12 times return on investment. And this is what I mean. It's important to track your return on investment. If we didn't know how much we spent, we wouldn't know what our return on investment was. So that was a crucial part of the competition as well.
Wow, that's amazing. And how long do you give yourself in terms of a time frame? Because like you said, some sales might happen immediately. Some might, the lifetime customer might take longer for them to purchase. How long did you give yourself to track that 70,000?
So that 70,000 was actually probably only about a week to 10 days after the competition, which is even more exciting. But yeah, I guess it's kind of, the long term and the short term. Like, the goal of this competition wasn't to generate revenue. It was to generate those email addresses. And, we hoped that people would purchase. But yeah, for me, within 10 days to generate that much return is awesome. But I would bet money on it that they have made even more as a result of that competition and the continued marketing to the database. And it told us that we came up with a great prize. The prize was tempting, that we had a good page design because our conversion rate was really high. And it also told us that the people that we were attracting and sending to the page and sending through the funnel were their customers. So that return on investment was a great indication that we've got all the pieces of the puzzle in the right place.
Yeah, definitely. I so agree with you that, absolutely over the course of 1 week afterward, they would have made so much more revenue from those customers who bought, because it goes back, full circle to the idea that an existing customer is that much more likely to purchase from you again if they've had a positive experience versus having to acquire a new customer, and that element of customer retention. So it would be such an interesting case study to look at exactly those $70,000 in sales that you made in 1 week after the competition, really what those are worth, now or a year down the track, and how much revenue they've generated from those people. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
And that's something that we do look at when we have return customers as well, the lifetime value. And if they enter one competition and then they enter another competition, and based on the previous competition, we do a really in-depth debrief report. So not just, hooray, you made 12 times return on investment. This is a success. Thanks for using us. We go into, who entered, what was the demographic, what could we potentially target next time, what ideas could we use for a competition next time. So the competitions aren't just isolated little island marketing events that happen one off and then that's it. You need to integrate them into your overall marketing plan and business direction. So that, the lifetime customer value is definitely a really important piece as well.
Yeah, no, I love it. And just going back to when you were explaining this competition that you did for the sporting goods company, you alluded to the promotional schedule. How long typically would you run a promotional schedule for where you drive the entries to the competition?
Yeah, so the duration of the competition depends strongly on the prize that you're offering. So if you're offering you know, they were offering like a $3,000 or so travel prize.
Okay.
So the value was there for people to hang on to wait for the competition announcement. I think that one went for between a month and 6 weeks, that particular okay. competition.
Yeah.
But then I've also seen, you know, there was a mum in one of the groups that I belong to who ran a competition to win like a $10 nightlight, and
yes.
it just went crazy. It went viral because she nailed her target demographic. You know, their mums have to get up in the middle of the night and take their kids to pee. So, yeah. you know, this nightlight was a lifesaver for them. So, yeah, this competition completely went viral, but it was, you know, one of those kind of more flash competitions. Like, it went for a couple of days rather than
right.
a matter of weeks. So
yeah.
price value is important, and also what you're asking people to do. So if you have to complete a 12-question survey and you have to really go away and think about your answers, you need to give them longer. You can't just have it open for a few days because
yes.
your entry rate will be, you know, rock bottom. So you need to take into account a few things.
Okay. No, that makes sense. And now with this particular case study that you just walked us through, and thank you for that, with a sporting goods company, exactly your ROI that you achieved for them was around 11 to 12 times, which is absolutely extraordinary. And I have a question for you, like, you know, is on average with a competition, like how much are you able to secure in terms of ROI for a client, you know, because that's an extraordinary number.
Yeah. So I guess it kind of depends on a number of things. It depends on how involved you want us to be in the process.
Yes.
Obviously, we manage that start to finish. So we were in there every other day tweaking things, making changes.
Right.
You know, if we noticed the conversion rate dropped, we were questioning why. We were making changes to the landing page. We were sending out more messages on social media. And so that's like one extreme end. And on the other end is, you know, we may just help you set up the competition and then it's up to you to promote it. So
right.
if you don't make the time or you don't schedule in the posts or your audience is disengaged or you've only got 400 followers on Facebook,
yeah.
then, you know, obviously it's going to be a different kettle of fish. But it also comes
yeah.
down to the goal. So the goal here was the email addresses. This
yes.
ROI was a wonderful surprise.
Yes.
But we smashed our goal of the email addresses that we wanted to achieve. So I guess for me, the success of a competition depends on whether we achieve what we set out to achieve, whether it's emails or visitors or conversions or sales or whatever it is.
Yes.
And the return on investment, the sales versus the spend, that's a bonus, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Another question I had for you, you know, you've talked a lot around the importance of nailing your avatar, right?
Yeah.
And ensuring that you are connecting with the right people. Now, how do you... And I'm sure it goes back to this, but if you have any other insights, so say that I were to, you know, create a competition and drive it across my assets, so my social media, my marketing, how do I ensure, particularly, you know, on my social media, that I'm engaging with quality leads? So, you know, you would assume that our fans and our followers are quality leads, but they may not all be, and they may tag people, which often happens around, you know, throwing their hat in the ring for this competition. So how do you ensure that you're engaging the right people and that they're tagging the right people and that virality, so to speak, is reaching the right people?
Yeah, sure. So a big part of it is your prize. So obviously,
okay.
if you're offering the, you know, the nightlight, then
yes.
you're going to be attracting people who have to get up in the night to pee, people who have kids, people who get up
yeah.
dark. You know, that's your audience that you're attracting. Someone who is totally fine to navigate their way to the bathroom in the middle of the night without a nightlight isn't going to enter. The same if you give away, you know, like a Business School for Moms membership. Anyone who doesn't have a business is not going to enter. So prize is a really big part of it. But also it's kind of about the work that you do post-competition, which is why I say you need to leave yourself enough time to convert those leads. So part of that is segmenting. So yes, you may get some leads that aren't going to turn into customers. Yes, you may get
yes.
people who don't have businesses or who are in the stage where they're thinking about it, but they're not committed. Then it's up to you to use your email segmentation.
Yeah, to nurture them and put them through your own funnels.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And also just asking, like, say, you know, make sure you tag your other mums, other mum friends who have businesses. You know, make sure you tag your mates who love to ride at the weekend.
Yeah.
Just be careful with the tagging. Just make sure that you don't make it a criteria for entry. So don't say, in order to enter the competition, all you
right.
have to do is tag a friend, because that's allowed on Facebook. But yeah, you can be clever about it and say, you know, if you won this prize, who would you share it with? Then they're going to be tagging who are interested in the prize.
Oh, I like that spin on it. The other thing, and I would imagine, and I'd love your insights here, is that it's also, I suppose, exactly to the point of asking, it's how you word things, right? And ensuring that you're using copy that really is resonating with your avatar, that you're speaking in a tone and using the language that compels and draws them in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, talking to the sporting goods fans versus talking to this audience who would listen to this podcast, we're going to use completely different language. So it's so important. And even, you know, when people talk about branding, they think, oh, it's just images and logos, but it's the images, it's the colors, it's the logos, it's the tone of voice, it's the words they use. You know, do they swear or do they not swear? Do they use the word awesome, or is that seen as, you know, too young? You know, what kind of words do they use? You're putting forward a personality for your brand, and those have to be reflected in your competition posts and messaging as well.
Yeah. And interesting what you're saying about the ask. Like, I know that in the past, having run competitions, you know, rewind kind of 3 or 4 years ago, I remember running one and I definitely asked too much and I found that people got confused and it didn't work. So can you talk a little bit around that and how it's, you know, important that you are articulate, and I think almost less is more with the ask? Yeah. Any food for thought there?
Yeah, 100%. So I always say that people essentially are lazy. You know,
they are.
They want to do.
We are all lazy.
They're lazy and they need their hand held. So don't ask too much of them. I always see these competitions that have, you know, name, address, postcode, email address, phone number. If are you ever going to mail them something? No. If you do, is it after they've ordered and they put their email, their mailing address in for delivery? Yes. Well, then why are you asking for it for the competition? It's completely irrelevant. And the more they have to fill in, the more they're going to go, oh, this is too hard. It's like a horse race. You're just putting fences and jumps, you know, and the more jumps that they have to jump over, the more chance they're going to go, oh, this is too hard, and fall or just leave the race. So you want to just lower the barriers every single time. But also for you, you want to keep it super, super focused. So I always say with competitions, you only want to have one pot on the stovetop, you know?
Yes.
You if you've got six things on the go and you're asking six things, you're asking them to write an essay, like Facebook, follow you on Instagram, like this page, tag some other people, do a little dance, film yourself, and you know, they're just not going to do it. And you're trying to collect too much, and there's no way you're going to need all of that. So it's like having a stovetop with six burners and you have six things going at once. Something's going to burn, something's not going to taste right. So just have one pot, one stovetop burner going, and just really nurture that and really smash that goal. You can always run another competition to achieve another goal another time.
Yeah, totally. Less is more. Keep it simple.
Definitely.
Loving all the analogies, by the way. Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much, Suki. I've really enjoyed extracting all this gold from your brain when it comes to competitions. It's been an absolute pleasure. In terms of where we can find more about you and Origami Globe, can you just share a little bit more around where we can find you on socials, your website, what have you?
Yep, sure. So the best place to get to know me is via the website, which is Origami Globe. So Origamiglobe.com.
Okay.
And that's where you'll find so much information, all the things we've talked about today. You know, I said content marketing is our big focus, so there's a huge amount of information on there. Also, we are showing people hashtag how to run a competition on Instagram, which is at Origami Globe. And we also have Facebook page, which is / Origami Globe as well. Basically, any social media, just type in Origami Globe and you'll find us.